Hello, everybody. It's Gary Stuckey. Happy New Year. Welcome back to another episode of Real Music. But today's show is not about music. It's about a book and about survival. Some cool things, you know, and I'm thinking if it was about music, it'd be like in the theme of Megadeth and that apocalyptic kind of futuristic kind of theme going on. And, you know, Chris Weatherman, the Angry American, has a brand new book, 12th in a series, Exploring Home is the name of it. Number 12 in the series of survival books, all fiction, but can really help you in the event that something happens and you have to survive on your own. Very interesting things. He also has a podcast, and maybe he's going to turn these books into a movie. We're going to talk all about it. So here we go. Here's Chris Weatherman. Okay, now you're the Angry American. Right? Is that are you really angry, or you're just
I stay pretty damn irritated.
So how did you get so irritated? So tell me about that. Why are you so irritated?
Look around. Really, it's everywhere. It's everything. You know, we're watching our society crumble. We're watching our nation be destroyed. We're watching humans as a whole. When we're talking bigger, especially Western humans, we're de-evolving. We're getting fatter, dumber, slower, and weaker. There's a lot to be mad about, you know. I'm a massive proponent of individual liberty, and that is presently under major assault, as we can all see in this country. And so, yeah, it kind of keeps me stirred up. But I started using that name back in 2008, I think is when I started using that name as a screen name on a forum, is all it was. And my username, and it sort of stuck. So,
yeah, just kept it sounds cool. Now I know you're a survivalist, and you got a new book out, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Exploring Home. Can you tell us about that, and what's it all about?
So it's the 12th book in the series. The series is, its official title is the Survivalist series, which I didn't want to call it that, but that's what Penguin called it. Most people just refer to it as the Going Home series because that's the title of the first book. And it's an EMP-based series. When I wrote this, about the only things out were Patriots and One Second After. That's really kind of all there was in the genre, unless you went way back to like William Johnstone, you know, Out of the Ashes and stuff like that. Or Last Babylon. But I wrote it for my own entertainment. I wasn't writing a book. I had no idea I was writing a book. I was just writing on a forum for fun. And it turned into a big thing. So did Going Home. And there's now Exploring Home is the 12th book in the series. The first book, Going Home, is just that. It's about the main character, Morgan Carter, just trying to get home. He's up on I-10. When an EMP takes place, and he lives down in Lake County, Florida, and it's just him trying to get home. And that was my only intent for that story, was just that. I was doing that story, but it was very, very, very popular. It had over 2 million views online. And then people started pestering me to publish it, and I was like, I'm no writer. I'm not going to publish this. And I'm like, here, I'll write you another book instead, or write you another story. And so I wrote the sequel, too. But they were persistent folks, and they kept pushing me to publish. And so finally I did. I paid my, which they donated. Somebody posted my PayPal account. People donated money. They donated $4,000 to me. And so now I'm like, okay, now I have to do this. I'm like, I'll do this. I'll get this book made so you guys can get your copies and make you happy if you'll just leave me alone. That's how I looked at it. I wasn't taking it serious. I didn't think it was ever going to go anywhere. And so I published Going Home, and about 6 weeks after it was out, and it was doing incredible. It blew my mind. I mean, it the first month it was on Amazon, it made a quarter of my annual salary of the job I worked. Wow. And Penguin Books called and made an offer, and I turned them down. They were mind blown by that, but I did. And 2 weeks later, they called back with the Godfather offer, you know, the one I couldn't say no to. And so I took that one, and then we were off to the races. You know, I did 5 books with them. And then we were negotiating to do more. And as they say, negotiations broke down, and I decided to go my own way. And so started self-publishing, and that's what I do now. I self-publish my own books. And so Exploring Home came out in November. It's the latest installment. And it's just, you know, Morgan Carter had to get home. All right. Well, that's just part of the story. What happens after he gets home, you know? And so the rest of the story up to this point is just people trying to live through that life, that sudden loss of all technology, essentially, and everything, and the population decline, the violence, and the things that comes with it. But in book 12, we're now on the pendulum swing up again, where the rebuilding begins of the nation. And I'm planning on stopping this at 20 books. I don't really think it needs to go farther than that. Everybody tells me they don't ever want me to stop. They want me to write them forever. But I'm thinking 20 might be it, because by then we're going to have essentially a restored nation. It's not going to look like what it did in the beginning, because it's far less populated. The issues are different. And those people that are left are going to make some major changes to the United States of America. They're going to amend the Constitution. There will be no ambiguity in the language of the amendments they do. It's going to codify it so that nobody can argue what it means. Some things are going to come off of it. Some things are going to be added to it. And we're going to change it a little bit. And it's to restore that idea of a republic. Cool. And that's where it's going, but there's a lot of work that has to be done to pull that off. So, man, right. Lighting is rough.
The sun is shining.
Yeah, it is. Hang on.
Yeah, at least it's not storm.
No, I should have said the sun popped. It's been cloudy and raining all day, and the sun just popped out. I was like, wow, all right, that's what it looks like. Cool.
So yeah. You say you're not a writer, okay? So how did you just become that guy? You know, I mean, I know you're a survivalist. How do you take reality into fiction with that?
Well, I don't consider myself a good writer, but I'm a very good storyteller. Like I can spin a yarn, you know, and I like to tell stories. And so it's just translating it to the page. Thankfully, I've hired a team of really good editors and whatnot to make it look like a book, the stuff that I do. But I like to call what I write faction, fact-based fiction. So I keep things as grounded as possible. There's no far-fetchedness really in my books. And I like to weave in the solutions to the common problems that people would experience in trying to live that lifestyle. You know, like if an EMP was to hit this country or a cyber attack that took our grid down, you know, how would you overcome all of the problems? And the problems are massive and varied and things that people would never think of. In my opinion, a lot of people don't think of.
Sure.
But I'm a student of history and I study civil conflict all over the world. In particular, I try to study how the civilians meet their needs and how whatever they're going through is affecting them. And try to learn lessons from them and incorporate them into what I do and how I do things and share that with people in stories.
Right. And, you know, that's interesting, you know, thinking about the future and how it would be, which a lot of these things could very well happen in the near future. Very well could. And that's probably why a lot of people are interested. They're probably looking out the window going, this might be next week. So they're probably looking into what you're saying. And it's not so far, like you said, it's not so far evolved from fact that you can go, I need to do this. If this happens, I need to do this. Right. Is that what people, when they're reading the book, they're going, this isn't.
Yeah.
This is nice. But
I think a lot of people read it. I think a lot of people read it and do the, what would I do?
Yeah.
If this happened, what would I do? All right, I see what this guy did. What would I do? And I think it's a way for people to formulate plans and ideas and come up with new scenarios of things to see themselves through bad times. And I think that's the biggest part of it is right now our country's in a weird place. The world is in a weird place. You know, this whole planet is. There's so much uncertainty out there, and people are catching on. And for a lot of them, it's what if reading, you know, what if this happened? What would I do? You know, how would I overcome this? You know, and the way American society in particular is built, electricity is the lifeblood. You know, if we lose electricity in this country nationwide, it would be terrible because nothing would function. You know, everything is based on electricity.
Sure.
So I'll give you a simple example. You know, I live out in the sticks. I live in, you know, in the country on acreage, but there's the cul-de-sac communities by the hundreds of thousands across this nation. And just one eye, just one thing. Every one of those places has one or multiple lift stations in them to get the waste, the sewage out of the neighborhood. Well, when electricity goes down, those pumps stop. Those muffin monsters stop grinding. What happens to that waste? Well, right. First, it'll fill the house nearest to the lift station, then the one next to it, and the one next to that, and the one next to that. Whoever lives up at the top of the hill will be the last guy. But it'll eventually flood. It will literally flood those homes downhill. And imagine the feuding that just that alone would initiate inside of a neighborhood. Right. When the first guy's house is full of everybody upstream's waste, he's not going to like any of those people. It's right. not their fault,
right.
but it's what happens, you know?
Right.
So I think about things like that. And I'm like, well, what could you do to prevent that? And there is a way to prevent it. You find your sanitary sewer that runs out to the city sewer in the street. You dig that up and you put a ball valve in it that in case of emergency, you can go out and close that thing. And now your house won't flood with your neighbor's waste.
Right.
So right. that's the kind of stuff that I think about and try to come up with simple, super simple solutions to.
And that's, you know, that's helpful. It's not, you know, yeah. they're not just being entertained. They're going, I need to do this. Do you do that a lot though? You put yourself in a scenario, like here's a scenario. You're flying in a plane. It crashes. You're in the middle of the woods. It's at night. You don't know where you're at. What's the first thing you do if you're the lone survivor and you're starving? It's dark. It's cold. You don't know where you're at. What's the first thing you do?
Well, there's a lot of variables to that question, but you get what's going to kill me first is the question that I'm going to ask. What is going to kill me first? And if I'm a lone survivor, I'm not going to be nearly as vulnerable as an average traveler because number one, I prepped before I got on the plane. I'm wearing rugged footwear. I'm wearing cotton pants and a cotton shirt. I will have a jacket even if I'm in a warm area, if I'm going to fly over the mountains, I will have a jacket in my carry-on. Okay. So I'm prepped to be able to get off of an aircraft. I sit in airports and watch young girls in particular get on airplanes wearing flip-flops and little booty shorts and tank tops and things. And I'm like, in their wildest dreams, they never would have imagined that they might have to wade through burning jet fuel to get off of an airplane.
Right.
Because they're not going to be able to. I think different. So I'm going to start scavenging immediately. I'm going to find if the luggage compartment is where I'm at, I'm going into that because in my bag that's checked, there will be stuff that will help me survive. And if not, I'm going to go through everybody else's luggage too. I'm going to take all the food out of the plane. If I can use part of the plane as shelter, great. If not, I'm going to go build one. And then get signaling set up too. I'm probably going to set up signaling before I even set up a shelter. Get some kind of signals going. But food's not an issue immediately. Water, big issue. I'm going to empty out the bar carts on the plane, you know, that kind, if it's there, if it's available. If it's not, I just recently watched the movie about the Uruguayan rugby team that crashed in the Andes, and they were up there for like 70 days and had to resort to cannibalism. But two guys managed to walk out in 10 days. But they waited 60 days to even attempt that. Well, they attempted a few times, but very poorly thought out attempts. I might try to walk out. It depends on where the plane goes down too. You know, if I'm in the continental US, I'm probably going to stay with the wreckage because they're going to be looking for it. Yeah. If I'm overseas someplace, you know, and I'm in the mountains, I'm going to find a river and I'm going to start walking downhill, you know, right. self-rescue, you know, I got to get out of here. Scavenging as much as I can along the way to carry and take with me. I'll steal wire out of the plane. I'll take anything I think I can use that'll help me, aid me, you know? So just and being able to make that conscious decision of this has happened. It's happened to me. I don't need to worry about why it's happened. I don't care right now. I got to deal with now. I'll worry about why later. But and to be most people, you hear fight or flight. We always hear that. Well, there's this third aspect to that, and it's freeze. And that's what a lot of people do. The plane's going to crash. They survive. They're going to get up looking around. They're going to be like, where's the help? There's supposed to be help here. You know, that's what I expect. And what I like to tell people all the time is you are your own first responder. Because that's when the bad thing happens, whatever the bad thing is, it's happening to you. So you're there. So you're your own first responder. You got to start making some decisions and you got to be quick about it. And that's one thing I've been in all kinds of different scenarios where I don't hesitate on things like that. I will make a decision. It might be a wrong decision in the long run, but I'm not going to sit around and wait. you know, depending on, again, the situation. But being able to accept that you're in an emergency situation that potentially could be life threatening and that you have to do things. You can't wait on others. You have to do some stuff immediately and get started doing it. So that would be the biggest thing that I would say.
And probably calming yourself down. You probably have to have a calm mindset because you're probably not going to make the best decisions if you're like panicking. I'm not the best at that, but
absolutely. So. I mean, literally, if I survived the plane crash when I was managed to extricate myself from whatever with the wreckage, or if I was out of the plane, probably the first thing I'm going to do is sit down and survey it, look at it, be like, oh my God. And there might be other survivors. In that case, I'm going to start trying to render aid. I've got fairly decent skills in that regard. So I'll do my best to help as many as I can. But I've got to make sure I'm taking care of myself first, you know, because if I'm capable and able-bodied and I'm not looking out for me, I can't be looking out for anybody else either. And I don't want to become another liability as well, you know. So, but yeah, stop and think for a minute. I believe, too, I have a very stoic attitude to things. You know, I ask myself the question, can I have a direct and substantial impact on this through my actions? And if the answer is no, I don't worry about it. I can't alter that. I can't do anything about that. That just is. I stop even thinking about it, move on to the next thing. That's, you know, good. If it becomes my problem again, I'll address it then in the same fashion. Can I do anything about it? No, it's not my problem. Then there's nothing I can do.
I need to be like that in a normal setting, not just to.
Well, that's how I am. I'm that way in a normal setting. I mean, I track all of the news and the goings-ons and the current events, but I don't sit and wring my hands over them because I can have zero impact on them. You know, I might have to react to them, and when that time comes, I will. But until that time, they're really not my problem. And that sounds callous. I mean, I think about, you know, I've considered them. I study them. I examine it. But if I can't have an impact, it's not something I'm going to waste a lot of my energy on.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about your background as far as getting to being a survivor and having that mindset, because a lot of people don't think about it. A lot of people go to Walmart and they get their stuff and they go home. They don't think, what if, you know, so how do you get, how did you get on that mindset?
Well, you got to get yourself out of the normalcy bias. That's a psychological fact that normalcy bias exists. It's the idea that nothing bad happened yesterday, so nothing bad will happen today. I approach every day that nothing bad happened yesterday, but something might happen today, and I prepare myself accordingly. You know, I make sure that I have the proper everything from the clothing I'm wearing to the tools that I'm going to carry for whatever. And then situational awareness, you know, not being locked into these things. You know, if I'm pumping gas, I'm not looking at my phone, you know, my head's up and I'm looking around. And a lot of times that'll deter trouble. Just that much alone, not looking like a victim, sure. Not putting yourself in positions where you would be reliant on others to come to your aid if things went really bad for you. And you hear stories all the time of people having to be rescued and then given these huge bills, and then people are outraged about that. And it's like, well, whose fault is it really, though? Is it really the state's problem that this guy needed a helicopter extraction off the top of a mountain in a snowstorm? Is that really the state's fault? Or is that his fault? You know, and he may have done everything right and something still bad happened. And that was the situation. And he was lucky he got rescued. But, you know, you've got to take personal responsibility is the other thing. And if you take responsibility for yourself, and I mean that in every facet, I'm my own first responder. You know, whatever happens, I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to call help, but I got to start dealing with it. And I think most people are too hesitant to act. And in today's society, they're more interested in getting their phone out and filming it than they are about doing anything about it. Yeah. And so they've got to get themselves into the mindset that you don't have to always just call a guy. That's not the answer. Sometimes you can't call a guy. Sometimes you got to be ready to act and be able to not only say, hey, this needs done, but to be able to say, and I got to do it. Right. This is going to be a suck fest, but it's up to me and step off, you know?
That's true. The quicker you get to that point, the quicker you'll get out of the situation you're in. That's very good.
Yes.
Now tell me this now. I was scoping out on YouTube and I know you were on the History Channels alone.
Yeah.
And then the little clip I saw, I know it's like you're trying to survive. I know that, you know, the whole deal, you're out there in the middle of nowhere, I guess, where you're not familiar with, in the middle of the woods.
Oh, no, I've never been there.
Right.
That was totally outside of my AO. I'd never been in that environment or an environment even remotely like that. Well, I'm a Southern guy. You know, I mean, I've lived in Wyoming. I lived in New Hampshire. And so I'm familiar with those areas and most of the lower U.S. But that
different world.
Rainforest up there, that was a cold rainforest. That was a whole new world. And I'm very well known for folks that know me and follow me that me and canines don't always get along. I get bit a lot by dogs for no reason, nothing I do to them. It's just a thing. And so when a pack of wolves showed up and wouldn't leave and were within 30 feet of the front of my shelter, I was like, they can have this island. And then, you know, I'm trying to get off now. To the History Channel's lack of credit here, I finally got a SAT call out and it took them 14 hours to get to me. Wow. So, yeah, wolves were gone by then. The sun was up and I'm standing on the beach like, well, what the hell?
What's next? Well, you know, that's something to think about, though. I mean, you know, you have a show or you have a book. The book's great. The book is interesting, but it's a different world when you are that guy in the book. So there's got to be something, though, whenever you're on a show or in a book and things are going the way that, you know, you think they might, or maybe some kind of new twist comes along. But when it's actually, and you're facing all this, when you have a pack of wolves trying to eat you, what goes through your mind? Now, had it just been you, you couldn't have said, well, okay, I'm not risking this, guys. I'm out. Now, if you had to survive, what would you have done?
Oh, I had a bow with me, but I did not have broadhead arrows. And a lot of people talk smack at me for not trying to defend myself from those wolves. The arrows I had were fishing arrows, and some arrowheads that I'd specifically designed for shooting waterfowl on the water to be able to retrieve them. And that would have done nothing to a wolf, but really make it mad. We did have bear spray, and could I have sprayed the wolves? Potentially. But what people fail to understand is that on Vancouver Island at night, it's like being underground. It is that black.
Wow.
The cloud cover allows no starlight, no moonlight, and there is no man-made light anywhere within sight of where I was at. Wow. So I would lay in my shelter at night and take my hand and I would go, oh, there it is right there. Yep. Didn't see that. No. They're right here. Yep. And so my shelter that I'd made hasty when I first got there was I just propped a ridge pole up against this great big spruce tree that was probably 8 feet in diameter. I could lay on this thing with my arms outstretched and not be touching the sides of it. So it was probably, 20 feet in diameter. I don't know, the thing was huge. And I would come out of my shelter at night and put my hand on that tree and walk around to the other side of it, keeping my hand on it to take a whiz. And then I would put my hand back on the tree and walk back to my shelter because I knew if I let go of that tree, there was a potential I could lose it. And I'd be stumbling around out there in the absolute pitch blackness and not find it. So people that don't go out and do these things don't understand all of the things that go into it, you know. And of course, you're in your own head. I was not worried about wolves in the least bit. My biggest concern was mountain lions because Vancouver Island is the mountain lion attack capital of the world. More people are attacked by them there than anywhere else. So that was my number one concern. And then second to that would be bears. But I've had numerous bear encounters and I'm not afraid of them. I know how to deal with them. So I wasn't even worried about that. The wolves, when they showed up, I was just like, you got to be kidding me. Really? Of all the things, that's what's going to walk in here right now. And I sat there and thought about it for about 2 hours and they just kept getting closer and closer and I couldn't see them, but I could hear them. And when they started approaching the shelter from the sides, that's when I was like, I got to do something. I made a little bit of noise. They didn't really care for that a whole lot because they could smell me, but they couldn't see me, you know? And so I was probably more just an interest to them, but I'm not willing to roll the dice. Wolves don't bite. Wolves eat. They're predators, you know? And I didn't want to end up piles of bear, wolf scat scattered across Vancouver Island. So,
don't blame you. You didn't want to be a wolf.
And this was a voluntary thing. I knew I could get out. Now, if I knew I couldn't get out, I would have changed what I would have done. And sure. What? I don't know. but because it didn't happen. But, you know, we could, people that didn't go do it can sit in armchair quarterback it all day long, but they weren't there. And they're probably never going to go do anything like that. So, you know, you have a float plane, you get on a float plane, an old ass De Havilland Beaver, rattly, rickety ass float plane, and it lands on the Sound in Quatsino. And I am 5 meters from the shore when they tell me to go.
Right.
And I'm like, what? And they're like, you got to go now. Right. I've got a ruck on my back that probably weighed 80 pounds because we had stuff we had to take, survival gear and things. And I've got a camera in my hand. And I stepped off the pontoon of that float plane in the water this deep and had to wade ashore. Wow. And I was the only guy that was inserted that way. I was the only guy that had to wade ashore. And when I hit the beach that day, there had been a storm the night before, and it had blown a mound of dead and rotting leaves onto that beach that were 7 feet deep. Wow. And I had to swim with all that gear, pulling myself through the leaves until I finally hit firm ground. So I was soaking wet from the moment I got there, and I never dried out while I was there.
Oh, wow. And the other guys,
that's what
others, they're in pillows.
Yeah, other guys had their own issues, predator issues, and different things. And my buddy Alan, he won that season. And I knew he was going to win that season because that guy's just an animal. There's a level of don't quit in him that's I've never seen in anybody anywhere. He's a pretty amazing guy. So,
or do you take notes of that stuff? You know, like your friend there. Do you go, I'm going to use that. Or have you used any real things and wrote about
them? Yeah, he and I are – I'm sitting in his house right now. So
there you go.
I will pull nuggets. In survival, I say I will cheat at every opportunity when it comes to survival. Okay? I will cheat every way possible if I can. So, yeah, I'll take knowledge from anybody. If someone has a better mousetrap, I'm going to use their mousetrap, not mine. So,
of course you are. So, and I know your book, though, is taken off. It's on like every bestseller list, like the audio books and Kindle and just everywhere. And I know, but the fascination is, like we talked about before, that's a very popular, probably a trendy thing, this whole apocalyptic idea.
Yeah.
I like it in the music. I like it in the movies. Yep. Would you do a movie based on these books?
Yeah, it's actually fully developed for that. We have a script, we have budgets, we have what we call the pitch deck, we have what's called a lookbook. I even have a sizzle reel done. It's fully developed. When the hell was it? Probably 2018. I think it was in 2018. I was in LA taking meetings with studios and told all of them no, because Hollywood wanted to do with it what Hollywood does with everything, and that's destroy it. And I actually told the president of MGM Studios to his face, no. I was like, no. I said, nobody wants your version of this story. They just want this story. I'm like, if you guys will make this, you'll make a fortune. If you try to do what you want to do to it, no one's going to watch it because you want to do all this. You want to check boxes, and people are tired of seeing checked boxes. Okay. They don't want to see that no more. So I walked out of every one of those meetings, and I'm still trying to find the right group of people that will do it the justice it deserves, what people want. I mean, it's a great franchise. It's got a huge, very, very loyal and dedicated following of readers, of amazing folks. I've met lots of them. I'm the kind of guy that I will say, hey, I'm coming here. Anybody got a RV hookup? And people, all right, do you care if we come crash there? Yeah, come. I'll go stay at your house for a week. I don't care. I'll hang out with you. Have dinner. We'll go out on the range. We'll go out in the woods. We'll do stuff. We can go fit. We'll do whatever. And I'll just hang out with them, you know, because if it's not for those people, I got to go get a real job. And I just don't want to have to do that again, you know. So I anytime I can interact with people that really love the story, I'll give them as much time as I can. I'm all about it. So it's important, I think.
Yeah. And that's good to know. I mean, it's the whole, I guess, realism of it all. You know, the people that are appreciating what you do, they're understanding. They have this understanding of what you're all about. You know, and but that, you know, that's exciting to me, though, to know that it's not just fiction. You can use it for your benefit. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, I was in Boy Scouts, and I know it's a far cry from surviving in the jungle or something, but I do understand about how if you're just in the middle of nowhere, this is what you got. This is all you got. You know, this is what you need to do to survive. It's very interesting to me. It's very, but being helpful to people, I think that's a big deal. I mean, I think it's one thing to entertain people, but to help people is like beyond, right?
Yeah, and I get messages from folks that are very humbling. You know, it's messages like, "You changed my life." They're like, "We lived in California, and after reading your books, we sold our house and we sold everything we could, and we moved to Missouri, and we have a 27-acre homestead now, and we're homeschooling our kids, and our life has never been better. Our quality of life," because I see my kids more, my kids are better, my relationship with them is better, but my relationship with my wife is better. You know, we're living closer to the earth and we're producing as much of our own food as we can. And they're like, and we did that because of the books that you wrote, and we read them, and it changed our lives. Wow. I've had guys contact me and say, "Man, your books helped me out. I was in a dark place and I was suicidal, but I was reading your books and you know, and I just kept reading your books, and that eventually went away." I've spent hours on three separate occasions with three different men that were ready to commit suicide. They were going to do it. You know, most of them were drunk at the time, but these guys were ready. I mean, you know, I could hear the guns clacking around in the room with them, and they're talking. And I talked to one guy one night for 8 hours until he passed out. I called him the next morning. I said, "Are you good?" And he's like, "I'm good. I'm good." I said, "All right." I said, "Man, you ever start feeling that way again, you got my number, call me. I'll talk to you as long as I need to." But the truly most humbling thing that's ever occurred through all of this thing is to talk to people on their deathbed, people that are literally that are dying, and what they ask for is to talk to me.
Wow.
And that's hard to explain, you know, and I've done it for a few people. So that always hits me hard, real hard. So
that says a lot about you. And it says a lot about their faith in you and believing in what you're doing. I mean, they trust you. For people, trust is a big deal these days. And for somebody to trust in what you're talking about, that's probably why you're successful at what you're doing. Part of the reason is that people trust what you're saying. And you probably know a little bit about what you're talking about. Otherwise, it wouldn't be reaching them much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I practice what I preach. You know, I do the things, you know, and for those people that are in that condition, my goal, the handful of times that I've done that, is to make them laugh. I get them laughing and just cutting up with them and just for however long they want to talk, 15 minutes, 3 hours, whatever. This is your time. It's all you have left. I'll spend every minute of it with you. I don't care. But I want to make them laugh. I want them to go out with that, not the suffering. You know, give them a few minutes to not think about it. And I'll talk about whatever, too. Whatever. I don't care. And I'll make jokes and do things. And that's awesome. That's, like I said, that's humbling. So
it kind of makes you think about your life and your purpose and what it's all about. And when you're making people feel better, you know, they're surviving too every second that they're living, and you're adding to their life, you know, until however long they got. When you're adding, when you're benefiting, you know, when somebody's benefiting from words that you've spoken and you've wrote about, you know, you wrote about it and you're helping somebody survive. That's what better way is there to help people, you know? I mean, that's really cool, man. That's really cool. Congratulations though on the book. I won't keep you too long, but the book's going great.
It's doing fantastic.
Who would play your main character in a movie now? Tell me that. I know you probably got in your mind Would it be like a Nicolas Cage kind of a guy, or what would it be?
No. My wife always says that Chris Pratt has to play the lead. That's what she says. And unfortunately, this series has been going on for so long now that a lot of the people that I saw in my mind's eye as I was writing the books have passed on. Like, one of my primary characters, Sarge is what they call him. His real name's Linus Mitchell in the books. But to me, that was always Gunny Ermey, Arlie Ermey, you know, and I got the privilege of meeting Gunny on a couple of occasions and actually gave him a copy of my book, and told him he was an inspiration to it. And the funny thing is, I see different actors in my head when I'm writing the parts of different characters, but I never see who Morgan's face is. I never see his face in my mind. Don't know. So
maybe it's you.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, it was a kind of a thought experiment for me when I first wrote it. What would I do if? How would I react? And the things, what would I do? So yeah, maybe that's it. And maybe I just can't see it in my own head, but and that might be why.
Well, you won't know, I guess, until you get there.
That's right.
Well, thanks for chatting with me. I'm definitely gonna check out all these books, man. You got me excited. I think the people that watch this will be like very interested in that fact.
I'll tell you this too. It's a lot of people, the topic of it kind of, they're like, oh, I'm not into that thing, but and this isn't my words, okay? This is feedback I get. The readers love the characters. So much so that I had a stint where I had a lot of issues in my life. Like, my mother was sick and in the hospital. And then in the middle of that, my dad passed away. And then my mom was still bedridden. And so there's a period of about 4 years where nothing came out. And even to this day, I'll get messages of, hey, man, when's the next book coming out? I'm worried about my friends. Or I miss my friends. That's how they see these characters. And I think if you've got a reader looking at your fictional characters with that level of concern and devotion to them, you're doing something right, you know. And I don't like to brag about that. I mean, I don't even tell people I'm a writer, really. I mean, they're like, you know, I'm like, well, I'm a storyteller. They're like, how the hell do you make money to tell the stories? I'm like, oh, I write them down. And people buy them. They're like, you're a writer? I'm like, well, kind of, you know. But
You can pay,
I don't like
for
to call myself an author. I don't like to do that. I don't know why I don't like to do that, but I don't like to do it. So,
this was just on my mind when you're talking about these, the fans of the book. Now,
yeah.
Had you ever had this lady? Maybe, you know, God forbid you were in a wreck in a snowy mountain, and this Annie Wilkes took care of you in a cabin, and like Miss.
All right, so I'll tell you a story. I told you how I would go stay with fans, and I hate to use the word fans to people listening. I'm not an arrogant prick like that. It just sounds horrible to me. Say, oh, they're my fans. The readers, the fans of the books, the readers. Sure. It's what I call them. But it was over in Hendersonville, North Carolina, and I met them. They were a great couple, and I was staying at their house, and they were great people. I'd known them for a little while before I was staying there. And so I wake up the next morning, and the guy knocked on the door. I'm like, yo, you know, and I was just kind of laying in the bed. I was checking Twitter, looking at my phone, and he came in, and he's got a smile on his face. I'm like, what the hell are you grinning at, dude? He's like, well, he goes, I started to get a sledgehammer and be standing at the foot of your bed when you woke up and be like, you dirty bird, you know, and we started laughing, and I'm laughing, and I reached under the pillow and pulled out a 1911. And I'm like, glad you didn't, because I'd hate to have to explain to your wife how I killed you in your own home. And we laughed.
Oh, jeez. That would, yeah.
That
don't happen every day. That's, yeah.
No, it was hilarious. I mean, we both were in tears. I mean, we were both just because his idea was so hilarious to me. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm glad you didn't, bro.
Well, y'all two were on the same level.
Yeah, we were. And for me, the books do very well. I make a very nice living with them. But I have met so many just absolutely amazing and incredible people that are now dear friends of mine just because they read my books. One of the largest night vision companies in this country was founded by a guy that read my books, said, I need night vision. didn't like what he found, started his own company. He's now one of only two L3Harris licensed manufacturers in the country.
Wow.
And there's so much more like that. There's stories like that that just go on and on and on. And like I said, it's incredible to realize the impact you can have on others with some words on a page. You know, it's I take things a lot more serious now than I did in the beginning. I went for about a decade not really taking it serious, just kind of like, you know, this is going to burn out sort of a thing. And when I realized it wasn't, I got really serious about it and trying to turn it into an actual business now, make it professional, provide a better finished product, be accessible and reachable and the whole thing. So, which I've always been pretty reachable. You know, I answer all my own social media messages. All that stuff. I give my phone number to people a lot of the time. If someone has a question for me and it gets kind of convoluted and it gets difficult to do over social media, I'll be like, here's my phone number, dude, call me. Let's talk this out. And it'll be a hell of a lot faster. So, cool. You know, I'm just like everybody else, man. I'm nobody special. You know, cool. But you know, I've touched some folks and that's nice to know. So,
yeah, that's really yeah. Nice. So, but you have a podcast too, right? So you talk
yeah.
about stuff like that.
Yeah, I've got a podcast I got some buddies on it with me. I got Sue LaRue. A lot of people don't know the name, but a lot of people do. He's a bit of a legend. Great guy. He's one of the best man trackers on the face of the earth. Emery Morgenstern, former Israeli SF, fantastic instructor and contractor here in the U.S. Bob Toombs of Mountain Readiness. It's a expo that we do in May each year and in October. And the four of us get on there. Sometimes we have a guest. Sometimes it's just us talking about topics, you know, and we just have a good time. So they're great people, great men to have around. And I think in today's world in particular, being able to see groups of like-minded men that aren't afraid to speak their minds because we don't kowtow to the BS. I think more people need to see that.
That's so true. That's good.
We lead by example, you know, and I'm not saying we're leading, but you know, we'll put our money where our mouth is, or we got skin in the game. We keep it that way. I'm not one to curtail my speech because some others may find it unacceptable or whatever. I'm not that guy. Like I said, I believe in individual liberty. As long as I'm not hurting you, you should leave me the hell alone, you know, or infringing on your liberties. That's another thing I do not do. I try not to infringe anybody else's liberty. That's a big thing. And more people need to realize that your liberty is yours as long as you are determined to keep it.
Right.
So.
Wow.
And I'm determined. I'm determined. So.
If people would believe that, we'd be reading these books as just fiction forever. You know, if we
yeah.
all have
yeah, just the same
page.
Pure enjoyment.
Yep. Right?
Exactly. You know, but sadly, we live in a world now where the state will compel you to perform on behalf of another at your expense. That is not liberty. That is not individual sovereignty. I am no longer sovereign if someone can tell me the words I may and may not use. That's yeah. absurd. Or tell me I don't have the right to self-defense, you know, or I don't, you know, it goes on and on, the assaults on our liberty. And I'm unyielding in that regard. And I mean it when I say it. Like yeah. I'll go to the mat. So,
right.
But I'm also never going to bother anybody.
Right.
I'll be the first one to come to. I'll be the first to come to another's aid as well.
Sure.
And I think if more people thought that way, we'd be better off.
That's the understanding that people need to have, no matter what side yeah. of the political spectrum. If you're looking out for the other guy, at the same time you're looking out for you, you're going to be okay. You know, if you're focusing on the wrong things, you know, people fight over things that, like you said, they can't even control that. But if you get them fighting over some stuff, you know, right.
Things that just don't even matter. And two, sadly, we've got a very, very, very like less than a percentage point of society is dictating what the rest of society must do to make them feel good about themselves. It's not my job to make you feel good about yourself. That's your job. Now, I shouldn't be doing things to make you feel bad about yourself. I shouldn't be infringing on what you're doing, but I don't have to like it. I don't have to agree with it. And we could even still be friends. You know, I've got lots of liberal friends, very liberal friends, and we disagree on many things, but they're still good people. And I'll hang out with them and laugh, and we very lightheartedly argue, jokingly argue back and forth and poke at each other. But it's never ill. You know, there's no ill intent there.
Sure.
It's just good natured ribbing. That's what we do with each other. We're friends. We're going to poke at each other, and people need to learn that. You know, just because someone says something to you, that's not a physical manifestation of anything. They're words. They're in the ether, and as soon as they're said, they're gone. And you know, and the only impact that words have on you are the ones that you allow them to have.
That's true.
So
that's a good point. Well,
that's it. Yeah.
I guess that's your next goal in life is in the political world. I'm just like,
No. I'd be esteemed in a heartbeat.
Run the other way.
I've said publicly numerous times that I would love to run for Congress, because I would bring back beating people to death on the floor of the House with a cane. Because that's the other thing, you know, society, we keep removing the consequences. We remove the consequences to the criminals, and they're getting more emboldened, and we're applying consequences now to their victims. And they like to say words have power, but yet they will say things in social media and all this other stuff that they would never say to me to my face. And I think that if people understood that their teeth were at risk for the words that they said, they would be a hell of a lot more careful with the words they used. I'm in favor of bringing back dueling personally. I think an honorable duel is a good thing. And we should bring it back, because again, society would be far more civil, because there's consequences.
They wouldn't, you know, be so quick to say the wrong thing if they knew.
No, they wouldn't.
Had it out with the guy. Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of people saying stuff, you know, that they're so quick. It's so easy. I've said it before, to hide behind a computer and talk about your beliefs and talk about people that are morons, or get on TV and demand your way, and everybody agrees with it, right? No, everybody don't agree with what you say, and that's okay. Yeah. That's what makes us okay. Yeah. But we don't have to hate each other because we disagree. There is no hatred. Well, should be there.
Yeah, it shouldn't be hatred. It's, you know, you just said it's disagreement. But the fact too that now the powers that be are the official arbiters of what is true, misinformation, disinformation, how it must be controlled. That should terrify everybody. That's 1984. We're in Newspeak. We're neck deep in it. And to a lot of the preppers in the world, and I get asked this all the time, they're like, what do you think is going to be the trigger? What do you think is going to set it off? I'm like, it's going off now. You're watching it. It's occurring. You're just not seeing it because it's happening slowly, but it's happening all around you every day, all the time. It's happening. So you need to be ready, because it's already occurring. Now, yes, there will be some large event, and you know, just a couple weeks ago, what was that gal from the DHS came out and said that we fully expect a black swan event this year. They're telling us there's going to be a black swan event this year, because that way when it happens, they're going to be like, well, we knew something was going to happen, we just didn't know what. Yeah, right. And I don't believe in coincidences,
right.
You know. So yeah, take care of yourself, be ready, and be ready, be prepared to act. You know, you know. I think it was Darwin that said that the organism that can adapt the quickest to the new environment will be the one that survives. Be adaptable quickly. Right. Like I said, you got to realize it. You got to be able to see it and acknowledge it. Here's a problem. This is what the problem is. This is what the problem can do to me. And I need to do something about that. I got to fix that. What's going to kill me first? And address that issue. And then the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. And my buddy Alan, he's got a great saying that I use all the time, and I've given full credit for it because it's amazing. Ain't dead, can't quit. As long as I'm breathing, I'm going to keep trying.
Right.
I'm not going to just roll over and die.
That's right.
So ain't dead, can't quit.
That's good. I'll have to get that t-shirt. Now, I do like that. That is a good slogan. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I've learned a lot by talking to you, and I know that a lot of people will appreciate what you said and the books. And I was reading about, I think, your book, I think 1984 is like the only, you know, book that's doing better than
yeah,
in that field, right?
Well, no, that was actually at one point I was number two. 1984 was number one overall on Amazon. Overall. I was just number two behind 1984.
Right, and that says a lot.
Yeah, that's a pretty big statement. I've got some new work coming up that's going to be a little more timely. Really aimed at exactly what's going on in this country. It's not going to be popular in certain political circles, any of the political circles. None of them are going to like this at all. But it's a book that someone needs to write, and screw it, I'll do it because I'm not afraid. I don't live in fear. I don't fear death. I don't fear anything. Not because I'm a big, bold badass. It's my philosophy of life has always been this. Life is a sexually transmitted disease with a 100% fatality rate. Nobody gets out alive. So I'm not going to worry about dying because I know I'm gonna, and I'll deal with it when it comes up. So I don't walk around living in fear. I also don't take, I'm not reckless or anything like that. I do like to skydive and shit like that, but that's fun. But I don't live in fear. And I think that's a big thing. I think too many people do live in fear. And that's sad to me because, you only get one tripper on this rock. You get one shot, and whatever you believe happens after that, good on you. But I know for a fact I've got this life. Sure. I don't know what happens after. So I try to make the most of it.
That's right. Well, I know.
Prepare for tomorrow, but I live for today.
Fear keeps a lot of people from being where they need to be. So,
prevents a lot of stuff. And it's a powerful tool, which is being wielded like a sledgehammer against us right now.
Well, hopefully, the more people that get on the same page with this will be the majority. And that way, whatever situation you're going through, at least you have an understanding of how to survive and how to know that you're not by yourself, because there's a lot of people going through the same things in your life that are dealing with these things. They have to make it just like you got to make it. Understanding that and not seeing the other guy as your enemy, we might just make it, right?
Well, and even in civil society, again, my buddy Alan, it's like we talk a lot, and we have some deep philosophical conversations at times, and simple things like driving in traffic. I'm not an aggressive driver. I don't road rage. I don't try not to give people the finger every now and then. Some guy deserves it, but the reason that I try to give people the benefit of the doubt and not be aggressive outwardly to people who. A lot of people would be that way. I try not to be, because I don't know what's going on in that guy's life. Like Alan, he explained like this one time. He's like, for all I know, that dude got out of prison yesterday and he is on his way to a job interview today. And yeah, that dude's got some anxiety. He's got some adjusting to do. I don't know his life. I don't know what he's going through. I don't know what he's dealing with or experiencing. And me being an ass to him could be a trigger that sets this guy off. So why be the trigger? That's right. I try not to be. I avoid conflict at all costs because I know I'm an all in guy. If it comes to that, I'm all in. One of us is not going to be alive when this is over because you're a threat and I've got to deal with you. And one of us is not going to be breathing. I'm not an aggressive dude. I'm one of the, it's really hard to make me mad. If I dislike you, you've really put in some effort because I'm very laid back, easy going, go with the flow. And I'll do anything in the world I can to help anybody who needs it. So, sure.
That's the best way to be. And that's like I said, that's probably why you're successful at what you're doing, is when you see that you're benefiting others, they're getting something out of it, you're getting something out of it, and it's for the greater cause. You don't have like a secret motive to try to hurt somebody. You're trying to help people. So there's no, a lot of people, they always try to find the fault of the person. It's on in the news. They're trying to find, well, let's see how we can take this guy and make him into the enemy. No, let's find out all the good things he's doing and find out how he's helping people. That's how, if you're focusing on that stuff, that's how people survive. They're not dwelling in that monkey mire of negativity,
Yeah. Find the common ground. You will have common ground with every person somewhere. Now, like you said, you may disagree with 90% of what this person does, but there's something there. And all right, let's try to focus on that. And let's not focus on this. But then there's some people in this world, and sadly, there's a lot of them that, you know, just need to be selected by evolution. And that's all I can say about that. So.
I totally get it. Totally understand.
Well, man, all I got to say, I'm just, you know.
I appreciate you talking to me today.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what you got going on in the near future as far as, I know you'd be talking about your book and some other stuff. I know you got your podcast. What other, you got any other kind of things going on that people need to know about?
May, the weekend of May 5th in Harmony, North Carolina, we will have Mountain Readiness. You can look it up, mountainreadiness.com. It's kind of like a homesteading prepper kind of expo. We bring in instructors, we give classes, we have vendors, we've got food vendors, and it's a good way to come meet like-minded people. And that's, it's crazy because at Mountain Readiness, we have, using this term affectionately, the hippie crowd. We have, you know, we have the homesteading crowd. We have the religious homesteading side of folks, which is a little bit different crowd, but we have the liberal side of the house. Everybody comes to events like this to learn and exchange ideas. And, you know, you may be like, well, I'm not real crazy about those folks, but their beliefs are their beliefs and they're not pushing on me. So I don't care. They need my help. I'll go get my help. But I also know that if I walk over and say, hey, would you guys give me a hand real quick? They will. Because we have that common ground. We're all here for the same reasons. We're doing it for different reasons, but we're all doing the same things, just for different reasons. So we don't talk about the reasons why we're doing it. We just talk about what we're doing. And we get along fabulously. And there's no conflict. And it's great events, you know. I will be also with Bear Independent in March 5th or 6th, I think it is. We will be in... what is it? And it's in Arkansas. Jeez, I'm terrible at this. Where's my calendar? Oh, that's right. I'm on my phone. I can't look. But he's doing a ruck march for, you can look up Bear Independent and you can find his ruck march, Fort Smith, Arkansas. It's going to be a 5-kilometer ruck march to raise money for Caleb House, which is a project he is doing for trafficked kids. It's a reintegration facility. It's also a safe place that when they're recovered, that they're brought there to have a safe place to be, and provided counseling and medical and everything else in the world. And this is also fully sanctioned by law enforcement. It's an NGO. So I will be there rucking with Bear. And we have some other events coming up, but you can help my Facebook page and you'll see events and stuff on there. And but yeah, you know, I always publicize when I'm traveling, where I'm going and what I'm doing, because like I said, if we go to a city, we're doing something. If people want to meet for dinner, we're meeting for dinner. I don't care if it's one guy. I'm going to go have dinner with him. You know, if it's awesome. 10 people, great. You know, but you know, we like to get out and hang out with folks and talk and let them realize, you know, you're not alone. You know, you're not lost in the wilderness. You know, there's a lot of us in the woods with you. We just can't see each other for the trees, but we're all out here. So.
Wow. That's good, man. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about your adventures and also your website. Then go to your website for more information too, right?
Yeah, angryamerican.com. Yeah, you can hit that up. There's a store. You can get merch on there, signed books, that kind of stuff. We've got some really nice blades that will be going into production this year. I'm looking forward to that. We've got some nice cutlery designed by Alan Kay and Donnie Dunn and myself, being manufactured by Gehagen Customs, Kyle Gehagen. Great American hero, good dude. So yeah, we got some products that are going to be coming out. We're going to be doing some stuff this year. It'll be a year. Hopefully, I hope we can get all these projects rolling before the wheels come off this train. And we need the things that we're trying to produce to provide to people.
Well, there you go. That would help. That would definitely help to have them if it hits a fan this year sometime.
Yeah, an election year, man. Never a good omen. It's an election year, so
look for it. Look for something. A meteor hits us all, or something. I appreciate it. Hey, we can read about it in your next book.
And a meteor hit. The end. I jokingly say all the time, can somebody stop this planet so I can get off? I really hope we can colonize Mars. I'll go. There'll be less people there. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, this one didn't work out. This planet. Let's go to another one. Hey, but that, yeah, the meteor crash.
So I've got a good buddy. Yeah, I've got a good buddy at Walt Brown. He's a writer friend of mine. He writes the Charlie's Requiem series with me, and he's got a project in the works set in the future. And I'm gonna give this out just because I know about it, and I won't tell much. But in his futuristic book, Elon Musk has already migrated to Mars, and he's living there. So I'm like, all right, we can pull this off. Like, let's go. You know,
that's not hard to believe. That I think that might happen in the next few months.
We never know. But thanks for having me on, man. It's been great talking to you. This has been a lot of fun. So
thanks, man. I said, I'm looking forward to all that you do, and I was excited to talk to you. I'll be checking out those books, man. I'm excited about those.
Yeah, but, give them a read. Let me know what you think. Yeah,
I sure will.
For sure.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it. All right, like I like care. To tell everybody when I close my podcast or lives or everything out, it's be good or be good at it. So we'll catch you guys next time.
That's it. With that, we'll see you later, man. Take care.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, everybody, to another show. Hope you have a great day, and check it out. Go to Chris Weatherman's website for more information. And until next time, everybody, whatever you do, keep the music real.